people who patterned their lives after the way Jesus lived his life. And so thinking about all of that, what I found fascinating is how important this idea of patterning or replicating is for all of us from a very young age. You know, I was looking back at some of my kids' art from the last couple of years. I have a 9-year-old daughter. She's super fun. And last night, they had this fancy tour of the school. Every single class had adopted one country in the world. And so you went through the school, and you got to kind of go to see cultures all over the world, and it was really kind of fun. And the kids had done everything from make crafts to build things to draw pictures to memorize songs to the teachers had like made food about like from that whatever culture it was, and so they kind of went all out. And so, of course, my daughter's first response is to take me into her room and show me her display that she and her friend had made. Their country was Poland, and I'm very Polish, and so she was doubly excited to show me. And it got me thinking about some of the various projects she had done through the years. One of the things I'm wildly grateful for as a parent at this stage in technological development is the fact that they can draw pictures, and I can just take a picture of it and then throw it away, and so it stores the thing forever, and yet it takes up no space. This is a gift from God to humanity, or at least to parents. But I was looking back at some of the things that she's drawn, my 9-year-old daughter, over the years, you know, and all the refrigerator art that now is really just Google photo art, that all the things I have at times set as like desktop backgrounds on my phone or my laptop or whatever, and there is this running theme, like there's all of these drawings of like our family or of a playground or whatever it is, and in every one of them I can hear this refrain, "See, Dad, this is a playground, and here's the slide, and here's the swings, and here's me." And then the next one, "Dad, see here, this is our house, here's the dog, and here's the cat, and here's you guys, and here's me. And see, Dad, this is us driving to Rhode Island. That's where all of our family is from. And so we're driving. This is our car. Here's the camper. Here's, you know, we're on the highway. And here's me." Over and over again, there was this running theme, particularly when she was really little. All of the pictures had her in them. And, of course, in my family, the most identifying mark about who you are in my family is whether or not you have brown hair or red hair. Because my wife and my son both have very, very, very red hair. And my daughter and I both have very, very, very brown hair. My daughter looks like a little copy of me, and my son looks like a little copy of my wife. And so, you know, you can always tell who's who in the pictures, which is great. But there's this instinct from, like, really tiny, like when my kids were very, very little, to replicate themselves in all of these pictures, to make little versions of themselves, to capture these moments in their lives. And it's fascinating because the word Christian, originally it was actually used to tease people who were followers of Jesus because it meant like mini Jesuses, mini Christs, little replications or copies of Jesus. And when we talk about discipleship, when we talk about the idea of the Great Commission, the primary thing that we're talking about is that God calls us, all right, everybody, congratulations, there is that weather warning that I mentioned. I now know that none of you turned your phones off. That's awesome. I also know that I didn't turn my phone off. So I had to stop and make some sort of comment because otherwise I would have gone crazy. My phone is now off. All right. Thank you to the Weather Service for reminding us to turn our phones off. That's awesome. But, you know, there's this, that when we talk about this idea of replicating or of making disciples, we're talking about something that really is, I think, core to how God designed us. We want to rub off. We want to make little copies of ourselves. We want to have an influence on the world. And we've talked over this series, we talked the first week about the fact that the whole idea of being a replicating follower of Jesus begins with taking ownership of our own discipleship journey, our own spiritual journey. Please stop. But I think it actually overrides, like, everything, doesn't it? Like, the only hope we have is to turn our phones completely off. But anyway, we have to take ownership of our own spiritual journey. We can't be replicating Christ-likeness. We can't help other people become like Jesus unless we are devoted to becoming more and more like Jesus ourselves. We can't skip ourselves in the process, even if we feel like, you know, and one of the things that happens, and the reason we had to pause on that idea, is because if you follow Jesus for any length of time, there will come this moment where you have seen so much of your life change, so much of your life transformed, that it's easy to think, oh, I've arrived now. And so we always need to be passionately keeping in mind this idea that following Jesus is a journey, that he's always calling every one of us to transformation, whether we've been following him for 24 hours or 24 years. And that's the first step to becoming a replicating Christian, to being open to Jesus changing and us into anything he wants us to be, to imprinting his image on us in any way, shape, or form, no matter what that means. And then the following week, last week, we talked a little bit about this idea of the content of discipleship, the idea that the two keys to discipleship as far as what we talk about, what we're doing, is the idea of vulnerability. We need to be transparent with the person who's discipling us. If we lie to them, it doesn't work. And second, that there are standards, that Christ is calling us up. This week, I want to talk a little bit about finding a discipler to disciple you. Because it is not a journey we go on alone. It's not just me and Jesus. The reason that church is so wildly important is that we need to invite people into our lives to help us change. And every one of us needs this. I was thinking about this today. I have invited Pastor Kurt into this role in my life, and he's been one of the key influencers in my life for the last 10, 12, 14 years, however long it's been. And I was thinking about how deeply this has impacted me when on Sunday afternoon before our lead meeting, we were getting things ready, whatever, and he said, "Hey, have you listened to this album, like music album?" And I said, "No, I haven't." He said, "Oh, it's very interesting." And he went into a couple of reasons. Now, I'll tell you, it's been, in the last 15 years, it is the only album, it is the only set of songs that Pastor Kurt has ever mentioned to me in any conversation ever. Inviting someone into your disciple to be discipling you is downloading that album immediately, right? It's saying, whatever's on his mind, I want to know. Whatever he's thinking about, I want to know that. Because if he thinks it's interesting, there's a reason. If it's in his head enough that he's talking about it, I just want to find out why. Especially if it's the only time in 15 years. I mean, he's mentioned dozens of books, dozens of movies. I mean, really dozens and dozens of movies. But it's the only album he's ever mentioned. Not telling you what it is. But, yeah, you're like, well, boo. Because you need to go find somebody to disciple you. That's the whole point of tonight. Not that you should be doing whatever he tells me to do. You need to find somebody to disciple you. And so I want to talk a little bit about who you look for when you are trying to find someone to disciple you. Because if you find the wrong person, they will still rub off on you and you will end up going in the wrong direction. And that is not a good idea. And our model for this is coming from 1 Timothy, a couple of verses at the very beginning of 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 18 to 20. 1 Timothy 1, 18 to 20. And this is, if I haven't really set up 1 Timothy well in the last couple of weeks, we have mentioned 1 Timothy every week of this series, and that's because Paul is a major Christian influencer in the world, and he specifically picked out Timothy to be a guy that he would disciple. This was the most personal, most intimate relationship he has as a discipler with another human being. And so there's a lot we can learn about what it means to be discipled and to disciple others by reading the content of what Paul is discipling this young man named Timothy in terms of. And so we're going to steal a couple of verses from there. 1 Timothy 1, 18 to 20. Here's what it says. It says, "Timothy, my son, here are my instructions for you. This is really setting up the whole letter, by the way. It's not just the things in what I'm about to say, but the whole letter is Paul's instructions for Timothy based on the prophetic words spoken about you earlier. May they, that is my instructions, help you fight well in the Lord's battles. Cling to your faith in Christ and keep your conscience clear. For some people have deliberately violated their consciences. As a result, their faith has been shipwrecked. Hymenaeus and Alexander are two examples. I threw them out and handed them over to Satan so they might learn not to blaspheme God. As we look for people who are disciplers, as we look for people to invest in us, I want you to think about four things that a good discipler is, four character traits of a discipler. Number one, a discipler at the core has to be someone who is a knower. A discipler is a knower. I love the fact that Paul calls Timothy my son. This is so symbolic of a deep relationship that they have. This isn't just somebody random off the street. This isn't somebody that doesn't know Timothy. This isn't somebody who's just giving generic advice that would be true for everybody. This is somebody, Paul is someone who knows Timothy deeply and well and has known him for a very, very, very long time. You can tell this because not only does he call him my son, but he says, hey, do you remember those prophetic words that were spoken about you earlier? I'll tell you what, there are maybe two times in my life when someone has directly said something to me that is what I would consider prophetic, by the way, is not kind of always super mystical or whatever, but prophetic is a word that we use when someone has a direct message from God for you, and it really doesn't always feel that fancy, and it doesn't feel all wow and whatever. Sometimes it's just, it might be a verse. Sometimes it might be something that Pastor Kurt says when he's preaching on a Sunday, and you realize, oh, that was directly to me. Like, if he had cameras in my house, he would have said exactly that to me today. Sometimes there have been moments when I've seen people praying together, and the person who's praying out loud doesn't mean to be talking to the other person, but they end up talking to the other person. You know, there's all sorts of ways it happens, but there's one, maybe two situations in my life where I have authentically felt like something clearly and profoundly prophetic was being said into my life. There aren't a lot of people who know all of those details about my life. My wife knows. Kurt knows. My dad knows. My buddy Josh, who lives in Oregon, knows. But I don't go around talking about those things that much because they're really private and very personal. And so personal, by the way, that note in the letter, Paul doesn't quite say what they are. You know, if I'm out in public and I'm having a conversation with you, I might refer back to some things we talk about privately, and I might say, hey, do you remember that conversation we had a couple of weeks ago? But that's as far as I take it because I don't want anybody to hear the details that we talked about. That's private stuff. Well, this was a letter that was being carried by somebody, some third person, 100 miles or so. And so Paul, in the letter, he doesn't want to kind of put all of Timothy's dirty laundry out there, or his clean laundry for that matter. He just says, hey, do you remember that prophetic thing that we both know happened to you? This is somebody who knows Timothy that well, who knows that level of detail about Timothy's life. The takeaway, I think, is that if a discipler is going to be someone who is a knower, if you want to be discipled, you need to be ready to honestly and authentically share your spiritual story from beginning to end. And a lot of times when someone is discipling you or when you are discipling someone, this might be the first conversation you have. It's the person being discipled sharing their spiritual journey, catching the person who is discipling them up on where they've come from. Because that's important. That defines you. And if you're inviting someone to speak into your life, you want them to know you well. And you want them to be a person who cares about knowing you well. So a discipler is a knower. Not only that, a discipler is an empowerer. I love this. I love the fact that as Paul is explaining what he's doing with Timothy, he says, "My instructions, may they help you fight well the Lord's battles." This isn't just warm, fuzzy conversation. This isn't just a chat that they have once a week or letters that they write back and forth just because they like each other. Paul is on a mission in Timothy's life. Paul has devoted himself to investing in Timothy for a purpose because Timothy was called by God to battle for God in the world. God is at work in the world, and God is in the midst of a battle in this world. And if you want to be prepared for the battle, you get someone who knows how to battle better than you and have them help you learn. That's what we're talking about when we talk about discipling. And when you find someone, you want to find someone not who's going to try to fight the battle on your behalf, but someone who's going to empower you to fight the battle for yourself. There's a difference there. This is not somebody who's a peer. It's not a buddy. It's not a friend. It's not someone who just walks alongside of you and is like, "Yay, you, it's going to be great." It's somebody who's willing to have hard conversations. It's somebody who is further along than you. It's somebody who's more mature than you, at least in the areas that you need them to be. It's someone who believes that you have a future, by the way. Someone who is an empowerer believes that you have a future and that if you are faithful to follow the instructions God has given you, you can fulfill that future. Don't miss that. A good discipler is someone who believes you can make a difference in the world. A good discipler is someone who is convinced that you have a future. And so they are not going to let you get away with compromising because they believe in you. So a good discipler is a knower. A discipler is an empowerer. And if you want a discipler to be a knower, you share your spiritual story with them. If you want a discipler to be an empowerer, you make sure that discipleship has a plan. A plan. There's something we're trying to get to together. There's a goal we're trying to arrive at together. And I am going to help you get there. This is strategy. You know, just recently, Pastor Dave and I were talking, and there's somebody who wanted to intern at our Revere location, and he said, "So what do I need to do? It's not for school. There's no syllabus. There's no whatever. So how do I go through that process with this young lady?" And I said, "Well, if there's no syllabus, you guys need to make a syllabus. You need to have some goals. You need to know when you're going to be meeting. You need to decide what you're going to meet about. You need to decide how you're going to strategically use the time that she is at the Revere location so that when she walks away in 12 weeks from now, she can be confident she actually grew in the areas she wanted to grow in. So she can be confident that when she walks away, she knew what, at the beginning, she knew what she was getting into, and at the end, she got what she came for." Strategic discipleship. Why? Because time is short and there's a battle on. And so we want to disciple like we're discipling for battle. A discipler is a knower and a discipler is an empowerer. A discipler is also a challenger. Keep your conscience clear. That one phrase speaks volumes. It is so easy to cheer for somebody, and disciplers are cheerleaders. They encourage and they exhort and they cheer you on and they celebrate you. And they're also willing to have inspiring but complicated conversations. Now, they have to have them right. There's this wonderful verse in Ephesians that says, "Speak the truth in love." And there's this beautiful balance that Paul, again, same guy who writes this, I think when he said this, he may have had that same balance in mind. We've all known people who could speak the truth and it felt like they were kicking you in the head. And we've all known people who loved so much that they were afraid to speak the truth. A real discipler is a challenger because they love you and believe in you. And so they might be willing to say, hey, I think life needs to be this way, or hey, the Bible says that this is the way life is supposed to be. And that's the content, by the way. A discipler will always come back to, this is what the Bible says. This is what the Bible says life is supposed to be like. There are so many things the Bible tells us about life. None of us ever run out of things that we need to let the Bible speak into our lives. So a discipler is a challenger. Hey, don't you, because we all have blind spots, right? And a discipler is willing to say, hey, you're missing this. Hey, you're ignoring that. Hey, you're not prioritizing this particular thing the way that you need to. Hey, you said you wanted to grow in this area, but you're actually not doing anything to grow in that area. Has anybody else ever been guilty of that? Saying, you know what, I want to grow in this area of my life. But then 6 weeks later, if you were to actually look at the way I spent my time, there is no evidence that I actually wanted to grow in that area of my life. Really, I just wanted to think about growing in that area of my life because it made me feel warm and fuzzy to think about it. It's just, it's hard to actually do the growing. A discipler is a challenger. A challenger as opposed to a shamer, of course. A discipler is not a shamer. They don't look at your past and say, man, you are a failure. You are awful. I am embarrassed by you. It is hopeless. You'll never change. A discipler believes you can be better. A discipler believes you can grow. And so a discipler says, hey, you can do this. You can do this. No. I know you are frustrated right now, but you can do this. No. I know it's not the easy way, but you can do this. I believe in you. Disciplers have that kind of positive attitude, but it is a challenging positive attitude. A discipler is a challenger. Finally, a discipler is a releaser. A releaser. There is nothing scarier for a passionate discipler than knowing that they are not in charge of the process. If I am discipling you, you are in charge of the process. It is your growth we're dealing with. It is your character that is transforming. It is your future that is in the balance. I have had this conversation so many times with people, and I'll have it 100 times more before I die, I'm sure. People sit down with me and they'll be, Pastor Joshua, here's what's going to happen. I'm just not sure I can do what we're talking about, whatever. And I'll say the same thing every time. Look, here's the deal. We're talking about your life, not mine. Tonight, whatever you decide to do, I am going to go home and sleep okay. Because I don't get to make it my journey. I've tried this. I have tried to, like, I have folded up in one of my bureaus at home a Superman cape, and every once in a while, something will make me want to put my Superman cape on and swoop into somebody's life and save the day. And every time I do that, I am reminded of one thing. I am not Superman. So if I try to swoop into somebody's life and save the day, it is not going to work. The sky is falling. Remember Chicken Little? Yeah, that's what I keep thinking about all the time. I literally have the pictures. I'm sorry if you are listening to this on audio right now. You're listening to the podcast. I love you all. Right now, the youth group is right above us, and they are banging and banging and banging, which I love because that means our youth group is growing. That means that there are more and more teenagers showing up every week. It means that there are teenagers who are so committed to following Jesus that they are here in the middle of the week, and they are determined that at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, they are going to they're going to devote themselves to finding out what it means to be a follower of Jesus so that they don't have to start at 25, 35, or 45. And I will tell you right now, it is worth the banging. It is 100% worth the banging. Yeah. So anyway, people on the podcast, I get excited about youth group, but that's what's happening right now. They're banging upstairs. It takes an incredible level of health to disciple someone, but still let their journey be their journey. This requires a sense of security, a sense of confidence that my well-being is not determined by whether or not the person I'm discipling is doing okay or not. It requires the level of emotional and mental health that will make me say, you know what, and this has happened so many times, there are so many times that somebody is in the middle of being discipled by us here at the church, me or one of the other staff or one of the small group leaders or whoever, halfway into whatever project we're working on and discipling them on, whatever track we're taking. Might be, let's say we're taking them on the six-week journey and they're 3 weeks in and then they completely disappear. Just completely disappear. Phone doesn't work. Can't text them, can't email them. They don't respond on Facebook. No idea how to get in touch with them. Send them a letter, it gets returned. Halfway through. Then, like 2.5 years later, who walks through the door but that person, ready to go? And I always feel like that's the moment I need to say, so are you ready for session 4 yet? Because I'm still waiting. Right? And if you're going to wait for somebody, whether it's 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, 10 years, and this is true for every one of you, by the way, if you have stuff going on in your life and someday you disappear, I hope you don't. But if you ever disappear and come on back, I want you to know we're waiting because we will be glad you're back. And if you're going to disciple people, and if you're looking for a discipler to disciple you, you need to be looking for someone who has the emotional and mental and spiritual health that they're not going to take it personally if you disappear. And they're not going to be mad at you. And they're not going to shame you. And they're going to welcome you back when you're ready. And they're going to let you make the mistakes you need to make. Because we all need to have the freedom to make mistakes. I say this to people all the time, and there are a lot of skills in life that the way you learn to do something well is to do it badly a whole lot of times. That's just life. And you want to be discipled by someone who gives you the grace to, like, try and make some mistakes and then try again and make some more mistakes, hopefully not the same ones, but let's be honest, maybe. Disciplers have to be releasers. They let it be your journey. And they need to let you come back, and they need to let you go, and they need to let you come back, and they need to let you go. They need to let it be your journey. Disciplers are knowers, they're empowerers, they're challengers, and they're releasers. As we get ready to wrap up, I want to make sure there's one thing I've made very clear, and that is that a discipler will have, if you let him or her, a profound impact on your life. And so it is okay to pick wisely. It is okay to let somebody earn it in your life. I'll be honest, unless you are being directly discipled by Jesus himself, because he's showing up to you on a daily basis, and that's not you, by the way. It is good to have multiple people discipling you, because if this person has a particular blind spot, this other person might not have that blind spot. And so you get a couple of people discipling you. And you be careful who you choose. And it is okay to say to somebody, so often, if you're here listening to this, it means you're connected with a small group or you're going to start connecting with a small group tonight. And if that's you, this is why we are so careful in choosing who is going to be a small group leader. I don't know if you guys know that, but we are wildly careful. If you've ever been in some of our groups, you might be thinking, "Boy, come on, Pastor Joshua, there's like 18 people in my group. Why won't we just split the group up?" I won't split the group up because I'm so careful about who is going to be a small group leader. Because I want to be able to say, any small group leader that you are in contact with, they're safe. You can let them rub off. It'll be okay. Which means I have known them long enough to trust them. I have watched them long enough to trust them. I have seen them do all of these things. I've seen them become knowers. I've seen them be empowerers. I've seen them be challengers. I've seen them be releasers. I've seen them be the kind of people who are passionately owning their own spiritual journey. I've seen them be vulnerable, and I've seen them value the fact that God calls us to standards in our lives. I've seen this in them. And if you're not sure who to pick, you go to your small group leader and say, "Hey, here's what I want to work on. Who do you think I should talk to?" They might say, "You know what? Why don't we get together?" Or they might say, "Hey, you should talk to so-and-so in our group." Not saying that the small group leader is perfect. I like to see the small group leaders being like, "Please don't build us up that much." And I'm not saying they're perfect. I will say, by the way, that I am in relationship with every single one of them, and I get to pour into them as they pour into you, which is pretty cool. I meet with every one of our small group leaders every other week, give or take. And so there's this kind of constant, they're being poured into, they're pouring out, they're being discipled as they disciple. It's this really kind of cool thing that's happening. And so I love the fact that we get to do this. And I'm so excited. Like, I have this mental picture. And I want you to picture this with me. Imagine for a moment, every one of us is passionately seeking to be discipled for the next year. That means that a year from now, instead of having, I think we have 8 small groups between our various times and locations and everything, it means like a good chunk of you could potentially be small group leaders. It means 5 years from now, like half of you could be small group leaders. And we could legitimately have, like, you know, instead of having 60 people here, we could have like 20 groups meeting. We could have small groups meeting literally every single day of the week. We could have small groups meeting every morning and every evening. We could have small groups that, you know, because one of the things I love, when we went from having just small groups on Wednesday nights to having small groups on Wednesday nights and Wednesday mornings and Friday mornings and all of that, all of a sudden people's ability to say, "Well, Pastor Joshua, it just doesn't work into my schedule," started disappearing. The day that I get to say, "No, you don't understand, we have a small group every night. We have men's groups and women's groups every single day of the week." All of a sudden, there's no work problems. There's no scheduling conflict. I'm excited about the moment we have online small groups, and we have small groups. Like, there are going to be so many creative ways that our church has small groups, but the underlying foundation of all of it is well-discipled men and women who have devoted themselves to being the kind of men and women who can rub off on others and help them to be more like Jesus. That's why we're starting the year with this. It's why it's the first thing we're talking about in 2019, because I want to invite you to be going on that journey with me, the 30 small group journey, the every day of the week journey. I am so excited to not just see your journey, but to see the journey of the people that you influence over the coming year, 5 years, 10 years, wherever you're at in the journey. And you might think to yourself, "Man, I am a long way away from influencing other people." And that's okay. I am not saying that we should rush it. Under no circumstances am I saying that. Like, some of the folks in this room who are influencers will tell you that I am more than happy to make it take a really long time, because I believe that if you build a good foundation slowly, it lasts. And I'm okay with a lasting foundation. I'm not okay with rushing you so that discipling others ends up harming you. That's not worth it. But I'm okay with you taking as long as you need to take and then being ready to disciple others. I think that's exciting. And